Penguin Random House presents 15 Judgments, cases that have shaped India's financial landscape by Saurabh Kirpal, read by Advait Karambelkar. Introduction. The Supreme Court, at times, seems to be running the country. At the very least, it has an outsized role in governance compared to other apex courts around the world. We're all used to waking up in the morning to newspaper headlines telling us what the court has decided in a particular matter. However, most of this coverage relates to political matters. Newspapers, other than the pink ones, seem disinterested in cases that relate to financial matters, unless there is some political link to them. Perhaps the editors feel that cases related purely to finance and economics don't make newspapers sell, which is paradoxical because it is these judgments that often determine the reader's financial health. Since most people get their information from the media, there is a gap in the knowledge of the common person in matters relating to the interaction between the law and finance. So, how do we remedy this gap in legal awareness? One way to familiarize yourself with the law is to read all the rules, regulations, and statutes. However, that is probably a task best left to lawyers, particularly as the draftsmen of most laws seem to almost enjoy using arcane and inaccessible language. A simpler way to learn about the law is to read the judgments in the area of finance. This is so for several reasons. Firstly, a judgment is rendered in a case that has a particular set of facts that can give a context to the issues on hand. We move, so to say, from an abstract discussion of the law to see the practical impact that the law has. Secondly, even though judges are increasingly prolix in their judgments, the language and the reasoning of the court are far more accessible to the ordinary individual than the actual text of the law. Thirdly, the judgments also give a certain historical context to the social and financial situation at the point of time at which the judgment was delivered. Finally, the cases often prompt a reaction from the executive, which has a far greater impact on the future than the judgments themselves. For instance, in at least one case that will be discussed in the book, the Parliament felt compelled to amend the Constitution and dilute the right to property. This set in motion a certain disdain for fundamental rights, which ultimately led to the Parliament entirely removing the right to property from the Constitution and setting the course for a socialist economy for some decades. This book is an endeavor to examine 15 judgments that have shaped the financial landscape of India and offer an insight into judicial thinking in matters concerning the economy since independence. The jurisprudence of the courts going back 70 years is extremely rich, and choosing 15 cases is not a task without controversy. Many judgments can make a claim to influencing the financial destiny of the country as well as that of the common man. In choosing these particular judgments, an attempt has been made to choose those cases that lie on the cusp of law and economic policy. Many judgments of the courts can affect the financial health of an individual or a family. For instance, cases relating to succession and matters of inheritance will have a greater impact on the affected individuals than a case about telecom licenses. In the larger scheme of things, however, it is judgments that have a macroeconomic dimension which have a long-term impact on the economy of the country. An attempt has also been made to examine judgments from different times of history to give the reader a flavor of the jurisprudential as well as the political and financial philosophies at different times in the country. In doing so, the aim is to speak to the past as well as the future. It is not possible to fully understand the economic jurisprudence of today without examining the past, that is, past precedent. Equally, as is said in a rather cliched manner, those who ignore history are condemned to repeat it. The judgments and the often knee-jerk reactions opposing them lay a path for a particular form of economic development. Examining the judgments, as well as the amendments that sought to undo their effect, has a practical impact on determining a future course of action. For instance, is it a good idea to continue to retrospectively alter the tax law after what happened in the Vodafone case? The 15 judgments also trace the long path of the economic history of the country. From the almost laissez-faire conception of the economy in the 50s to the socialism of the 70s and 80s, from the recognition of the effects of liberalization in the 90s to the attempt to rein in the perceived excesses of liberalization, the judgments reflect the sentiment of the era that they were delivered in. For instance, fresh with the liberal zeal stemming from a new constitution, the courts in the first year of the constitution passed judgments upholding the right to property of the zamindars. The reaction was swift and stern. The judgments generated a backlash that fundamentally affected the relationship between the state and the individual. The constitution was amended only 15 months after it had been promulgated, even before the first election to parliament had been held under the constitution. The parliament was so incensed at the perceived judicial overreach that the infamous ninth schedule was inserted into the constitution. A schedule that made laws immune from judicial scrutiny. Over the years, this schedule has been amended, and a host of economic and financial laws have been added to it, leaving the citizen with no legal recourse against unjust laws. The Foreign Exchange Regulation Act, 1973, and the Industries Development and Regulation Act, 1951, are among some of the pieces of legislation that shackled the Indian economy, but were immune from judicial oversight because of their insertion into the Ninth Schedule to the Constitution. This tension between a free market vision of the courts, backed by the right to property guaranteed under the Constitution, and the socialist impulses of the executive, continued for a while. The government attempted to nationalize the banks and pay minimal compensation to the shareholders. The court struck down that action in 1970. In the now familiar manner, the law as well as the constitution were amended, and the road was set for the virtually complete nationalization of the banks, leading to the formation of the large public sector banking system that exists today. After a tense battle, the winds of judicial opinion shifted. The courts became more and more socialist in their thinking, giving judgments that were more in tune with the economic philosophy of the government. Some would say that the courts became more loyal than the Queen, with the socialist rhetoric of some judgments exceeding that of the lawyers for the government. The late 70s and 80s saw a series of judgments where the courts became more and more left-leaning. Symptomatic of this ideological shift was the judgment of the Supreme Court in the case of Bangalore Water Supply. The case was, on the face of it, about an arcane interpretation of the word industry. Specifically, the court was asked to determine which establishments and businesses were covered under the ambit of the Industrial Disputes Act, 1947. In their zeal to cover as many workers as possible, the court gave an almost impossibly large definition to the term industry, including even charitable organizations, professional services like doctors and lawyers, as well as municipal agencies. The discussion in the judgment clearly shows that the judges thought that the function of enterprise was only peripherally to make money. This was in keeping with the increasingly socialist fervor that was evident in the country. These were the years when the word socialist was introduced in the constitution and the right to property was formally done away with. The swing leftwards, both in the politics of the country as well as in the ideology of the judiciary, was like the proverbial pendulum. The license quota Raj and other outmoded laws made the economy of the country weak. The reforms of the 90s commenced and businesses were slowly free.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?